Hey everyone, this is John.
This is Wes.
And this is Ryan.
And this is the Super Nintendo Show, the best damn Nintendo podcast on the internet. And like the name implies, we're going to talk about Super Nintendo games, and we sort of talk about them semi-chronologically as they came out.
Why is your screen so dark?
Is it frightening?
Oh,
well,
Sorry, yeah, we're... Hi, John.
Hi.
Hi.
And what we usually do
is
talk about...
Let's podcast.
Who is this?
How do you podcast again?
Why am I hearing
it? What we usually do...
You said you'd give me water.
We're talking about Super Nintendo games. This came out sort of semi-chronologically 21 years ago. So that puts us at May of 1996. And the big highlight there is Super Mario RPG. But before we get to Super Mario RPG, Wes, we just beat Donkey Kong Country 2.
Oh my god, we did.
Like 10 minutes ago.
It was amazing. It was amazing.
We talked about that one, I think, back in December. And we really liked it.
Yeah.
But we never finished it. And a couple weeks ago, I went back and was like, you know what? I'm going to finish this. Hmm. And we got to the bumblebee boss, the wasp boss, where you have to fight as the squawk, the parrot.
Oh, and you shoot it like from the...
Yeah, and
who beat it.
Yeah, it had like a flashing stinger. He had him and the stinger, a.k.a. his penis.
You had to shoot that bee in the junk repeatedly.
Yes. As science has shown. The stinger is in fact its penis.
And we, yes, you did beat it. But then when
that
we got
not easy, but there is a pattern that you can do. Yes.
When we got to the next level, though, we came over before a Kong College opened up, so we couldn't save it. So it kicked us all the way back before that boss. We're like, you know what? Never mind. We're going to talk about this game without beating it.
Yeah.
So I did go back and beat it. I came up with there were only like two worlds left, and then like the final world, which was one level in the boss fight.
Uh-huh.
I came up with this strategy of, you know, beat a boss, go back to the first world, play the first level four or five times, build up a bunch of coins and lives, then proceed to the next world.
Yeah.
And I usually have enough lives and coins to go ahead and make my way to the Kong College. Like in the fifth world, the one directly after the Bumblebee boss, you don't get to the Kong College till like four or five levels in. And then there's only one more level than the boss. So it's really mean. Yeah. If we...
That's pretty tough.
Yeah, we would have been bashing our heads against the wall if we were loading our save before the Bumblebee boss and then trying to work through five levels of Donkey Kong Country 2. But, you know, there were some really cool levels. They had a bunch of cool minecart levels, maybe only like two or three, to the point where Wes jumped in. But there was one where you're being chased by this big, like, skeleton ghost guy, and you had to hit green barrels in order to extend your time. Like, there's a countdown. And if it expired, he got you and you lose. You had to hit green barrels to extend your timer. You had to get to, if you hit a red barrel, it drains your timer even more. So I think there are some pretty cool levels in there. And I find that the levels are much more enjoyable when you're not stressed out about game overing and losing all your progress.
Yeah.
I think game is eminently more playable when you're not just thinking, if I lose, I'm going to have to go back and redo all this stuff.
And I think that's unfair for them to do that, where it's like, you're damned if you do, damned if you don't, where it's like, you build up a bunch of lives when you're playing, and you're like, oh, I did so great at this part, and that's when, like, you should have that nice cache of lives to burn through if you need it, but then it's like, you stop playing, and then you restart the game, and you're suddenly back to no lives, and all you have is just this one arbitrary spot that they picked that says you're okay to play from here.
Yep.
Like, it's very frustrating.
Yeah.
Because all of the goodwill that you should have built up on the first few levels, that should have been your stockpile.
Goes like out the window.
15, 20 lives to solve some of these tougher levels. And also, like you're saying, like if they distribute them so unevenly, where it's like, you know, you beat two really tough levels and you're feeling good, and then you get fatigued on lives, and then you're out of lives, and then you go to the third one, and it's like, well, now I got to redo these two stages, even though I've clearly proven I can consistently beat them.
Mm-hmm.
So you don't get the credit for having done that.
Yep.
Yeah, it sucks.
And you can compare it to something like a Super Mario World. The difference with Super Mario World is that, yes, when you do restart the game, you start over on lives. There are only specific points where you can save it, but you can go to those points at any time. Like, there's one ghost house we always go to, like, right by the top secret area where it's just real easy to...
In the course of about 5 minutes, you can probably have 100 lives and have a Yoshi with two caves.
And see, that's the thing, is, like, when you get far enough into the game, you know, okay, if I go to this level, I can rack up a bunch of lives from a fresh save and just be able to proceed. Mm-hmm. Whereas in like Donkey Kong Country 2, if you know like, hey, I know I can gain 20 lives at this level, you can't like swap between worlds without at least building up some coins to get to Funky Kong's flight or mm-hmm. beating a boss, which kicks you back to the world map. Whereas in something like Super Mario World, it still has like these really archaic systems of lives and saves and live resets. But they make it a bit more accessible to get back to where you were when you last left off.
Yeah.
And I think I brought this up when we originally talked about the game. A game that came out a year, I think, in a year, maybe a little bit less than a year,
mm-hmm.
Donkey Kong Land on the Game Boy, inferior technology, just saved after every level. It was like, hey, you beat this level, save. You don't have to do it again.
Yeah.
Anyway.
Mm-hmm.
OS, you knocked out the final boss.
Oh yeah, that guy was a dick.
Yeah.
Was it King K. Rool?
Sure was.
Nice.
Oh my god.
Like he's still rolling his little crown at you?
No, he's a pirate. He's a pirate.
Yeah, with a big gun.
He's got a musket and he shoots you with these giant cannonballs out of his musket.
Well, that's like a setup in the Donkey Kong Country boss, right? Like as you get into the thing where it's like he's gonna roll a crown at you, it comes back. Then he just like jumps up in the air and the cannonballs drop on you and you have to time the cannonballs as they're falling.
It's a similar pattern recognition thing, except this time it's just in what pattern they're going to be coming out of his musket. Sometimes they spin coming out of his musket.
Yeah.
Sometimes the shots like go in like wave patterns.
And they're bouncing off the ground. And then the third one, he was shooting like weird different colored gas that did different stuff.
Yeah, he had a gas gun like Darkwing Duck.
Yeah, so one like... thank you for the reference.
You're welcome.
Like, the first one wave, like, if you hit it, it froze you, and then he was coming at you really slowly, and you had to, like, thaw out and jump him.
Mm-hmm.
And the next one, there were red ones, and they caused you to move slowly, so you had to, like, dodge a couple of cannonballs until it wore off, but you were, like, moving real slowly. Last one, I don't know. I dodged all the last ones, so I don't know what that one would have done.
Yeah.
Let's not find out.
No.
But the thing is, you beat the final boss. We beat the game.
Yep.
It was a team effort. I stand by that.
Yep.
And...
You were in there for a little bit,
yeah,
and then you died again, and I went back in.
Right. We got to Cranky Kong. Then it's like, oh, you beat the game. Well, let's see how many of my little tokens you found while you're off rescuing like, Donkey Kong. Like,
do you know the hell I've been through? This is traumatizing for these...
I thought the goal was to rescue Donkey,
yeah,
not like find
shit.
His little doodads.
Like, I don't really, come on, what the hell?
Fuck you, Cranky.
What are you, Professor Oak? I'm not doing your errands,
right?
Bitch.
He got real snarky about it. And, like, because we found, like, four, which is, of course, pathetic, because I think there's, like, 49 throughout the game.
Oh, yeah, because by the time you get four, you're like, fuck this, I don't even care anymore.
And he didn't, like, put up a sarcastic pretense. He was like, you're not very good at this, are you?
Yeah, see, Yoshi, Link, and Mario beat you. They got blah, blah, blah.
Link didn't even have pants. So he's... Anyway, but yeah, I ended up having a lot of fun with the game, a lot more fun with the game when I came up with this system, just being able to hoard lives and jump from level to level.
Yeah.
Much more playable. So we're actually here to talk a little bit about Super Mario RPG because it is 21 years old as of May 13th.
Holy cow, we can legally drink.
Just sure like
can.
I am, everybody.
Hey-o.
Yeah. Drinking Coppertail, by the way. It's a brewery from Tampa.
Yep.
Stroke. It's good stuff.
Yeah, it's fun.
I think I made you guys try a little bit of it and you guys didn't care for it too
much. Yeah, there's actually venom from copper snakes in
yes.
it.
Copperhead snakes?
Yes.
I see what you
they
doing.
Got it out of its
oh,
tail.
It's. I mean, I can't even see the color blue anymore. It's wonderful.
My brother-in-law actually is colorblind.
Really?
Yeah, I find it fascinating. I don't know why. I was like, so what does that look like? I don't know.
So does he constantly...
Like, he sees colors, but they're different.
How do traffic lights work for him?
Well, he knows... Very sketchy. He knows what colors are at this point. But like, when he was a kid, he would be, like, painting, like, coloring grass, but he'd use the color orange instead of green.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like, shit like that.
Well, see, that's the thing. It's not like he doesn't see colors. It's just there aren't as, like, quite the same distinction. Like, he doesn't see in gray.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. It's kind of...
It is odd. I think like the most common one is people confuse blue and green, but green and orange, that's interesting.
Yeah, something like that. Well, it was like a light green, because it's like a yellowish green, so you'll go full-blown orange when that happens.
Okay.
Because he was telling me, I was like, what color is your shirt? Like, it's blue? Oh, yeah. I think that's purple.
He's like, really? You lie to him about stuff like that.
I'm not wearing gloves.
It's bright fluorescent.
I'm wearing a flannel jacket.
It's camo. You can't tell.
But Super Mario RPG is a game that came out on March 9th, 1996 in Japan, so not really too much of a delay in localization there. Mm-hmm. Developed by Square. You may have heard of them. Developed a lot of
RPGs. There are a bunch of squares over there, too.
Stop it. Published by Nintendo, of course. And there's actually an interesting article about this game over on US Gamer. Bob Mackey is the author of this article and is talking about just this game in general and its early release. And I think one of the big takeaways I took from this article is how this Mario RPG was Nintendo's sort of last-ditch effort to mainstreamize RPGs on the Super Nintendo, because we're at this point 3 months out from the N64 release.
Oh, so close.
Yep, here it comes. And Nintendo, throughout the entire NES and Super Nintendo lifespan, were trying their damnedest to get RPGs to become as mainstream in North America and Europe as they were in Japan.
Mm-hmm.
And this was probably mostly to throw some support to their third-party developers. Because when you think of like the NES and Super Nintendo libraries, just exclusively Nintendo stuff, you got a lot of different things. You got a lot of platformers and adventure games. You got shooters like Star Fox and platformers I mentioned like Donkey Kong Country from developers like Rare. But one thing that
Come on, we're the people that like Mike Tyson Punch-Out.
Right.
They thought they were going to get us with like character building, item management RPGs.
Right, and see that.
Spare me.
But that's the thing, like the one genre on the NES and the Super Nintendo that Nintendo didn't really tackle themselves. Yeah. Like they did Mother and Mother 2 on the NES and the Super Nintendo, and that was sort of their sort of Western take on RPGs at the time, because it had a very like contemporary Western feel to it, like as far as the setting is concerned.
Yeah, it's true. It's like the same mechanics, but it's just totally different. Mm. Items you just associate it with like Americana as
right.
opposed to
like
you
know, baseball
bats.
Yeah. But I think like their most like mainstream RPG, to use the term loosely, would be The Legend of Zelda. And it does have like these RPG elements behind these like these action mechanics to it. There are these RPG elements, things like growing your HP. And, you know, you upgrade your sword in order to increase your attack. You're not really
better
doing much.
Better items, better lifting, swimming.
Yeah.
Things like that.
But mostly...
Jars to hold items
that
could be of use later.
But mostly what you're doing in games like Legend of Zelda is you are accessing tools in order to open up new areas for you to explore. And it's more of an adventure game in that way.
That's the thing you never see. You never see a list of characters with a current HP divided by max HP.
Right.
It's not like a turn-based battle thing.
Right.
Which is what
but you do have...
Clearly you're seeing here.
You do have varying levels of characters, and usually it is their color. Like a little palette swap that's denoting, like, hey, here is a red Octorok, or here's a red Moblin. They're not as strong as the blue versions of themselves.
Yeah.
So there is a bit of that to it. But you can see, like, even as far back as the mid to late 80s on the NES, where you had a game like Dragon Warrior that was given away for free with a copy of Nintendo Power, just to sort of be like, hey, this is called an RPG. Aren't these cool? Aren't these great?
Yeah.
But it never really became as popularized within mainstream culture. It was just very niche, these RPGs. And there are some really amazing Super Nintendo RPGs.
Well, it's a console that's regarded as being, mm-hmm. you know, one built around RPGs. Like, RPG fans
yeah.
should definitely pursue a Super Nintendo.
Right.
Just because they released so many great games over the years.
But then you have Nintendo then going to Square, or however the partnership came about. It's like, hey, mm-hmm. let's try one more thing in order to try to get people to pay attention to the genre. Let's put Mario in it.
Yeah.
And Square essentially had free reign with this property. And it's something that Nintendo hadn't done before, was license out like Mario for someone else to make a game with him.
Mm-hmm.
They had been playing it fast and loose, especially in the late 80s and the early 90s, with the Mario property. There were a bunch of Mario animated shows, like the Mario Super Show. There was a Super Mario Brothers movie.
Oh my god, at that hell.
Yeah, and it was really after the Super Mario Brothers movie that they started to get more gun-shy. And I think that was 1993, so this wasn't too long after the Mario movie.
So it took them to the Mario movie to be like, all right, we got to go now. We're doing something
horrible. Oh, but God, like the late 80s and the early 90s were like the heyday of just merchandising the shit out of your popular franchise.
Yeah.
There was a Mario breakfast cereal.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, things were nuts.
Yeah, they're like meatballs in a breakfast cereals. You wouldn't think that would work for some reason, you know.
That sounds delicious. Just a bunch of meat, marinara sauce, and milk just mixed all together.
Yeah, that's exactly it. Very good for you. It's even tons of protein in there.
Indeed.
Yeah.
So, this game was produced by someone you may have heard of, Shigeru Miyamoto, creator of Mario, creator of Zelda, creator of Donkey Kong. He's made some games in his day, but really, like, this producer title was probably much more of oversight. In this particular case, he was balls deep into Mario 64 development at this point.
Mm-hmm.
So, what, you're making a face?
Nothing.
That imagery didn't do it for you?
Balls deep into Mario.
His hands were not really...
You know, Balls 3D, the game for the Super Nintendo.
Yeah.
You didn't play that one? I think we talked about
that. Yeah, that was a Black Label game. I remember that one. This game was produced, of course, by Shigeru Miyamoto, like I just said, directed by Yoshihiko Maekawa and Chihiro Fujioka. And these guys were with...
Frank Schultz. Frank Schultz.
Brian Smith.
Yes, Brian Smith did that one.
Frank Johnson. So these guys were with Square up until about 2000, when there was like a mass exodus from Square. But right around the time Square and Enix were merging, there were a bunch of other little companies that splintered off from Square. So these two guys who directed this game left Square and then started up a company with a bunch of other Square expatriates called Alpha Dream.
Uh-huh.
And Alpha Dream has gone on to make every single Mario & Luigi Superstar Saga game.
Okay.
So you get the continuation of the Mario RPG game within the Mario & Luigi Superstar Saga franchise.
Mm-hmm.
And it bears a lot of the same elements, the turn-taking battles, but with like the action-based timing mechanics, where if you jump on an enemy's head and you press the jump button again at the right time, you're doing extra damage. This Mario RPG doesn't really lean upon those mechanics as heavily as the Mario and Luigi games do, the more modern games do. Because if you're Mario and you swing your hammer at someone in Mario RPG, you don't, and you miss your timing to do extra damage, your attack isn't totally nullified. In a more modern Mario and Luigi RPG game,
land combos to really even accomplish anything.
Right. If you try to like kick a shell at someone and you miss that timing to do the extra damage, your attack just goes away altogether. It's much more dependent on those mechanics. It's not an extra thing anymore.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's really all the setup I had to do for this game. And Wes, you've played a little of this before, yes?
I have played a little bit of it. Not a whole lot, but you know, a little bit.
Well, when you think of Mario RPG, what's the first thing that comes to mind?
Well, video game.
Three associations here.
Yeah, I think oddly enough. Oddly enough, when I think of Super Mario RPG, the first thing that comes to mind is a stupid little marshmallow.
Oh, yeah, Amalo. He was one of the original characters. Square did use some Mario properties in this game, like Mario's in the game, Peach and Bowser in the game, but they don't use their traditional roles. Like, Bowser starts out as a sort of villain, but he eventually is, well, he's immediately foiled by the main villain of the game, and he eventually joins up with your party later.
Mm-hmm.
Same with Peach. She is initially kidnapped by a guy who bears a striking resemblance to Wario, who is not Wario.
Huh.
And she joins up with your party later as well. So you get these two mainstay Mario characters who never really interacted like directly with. You never really got to.
Is it Geno?
Geno is
the puppet.
Yeah, he's a little wooden dude.
And he's cool.
Him and Mallow are the original characters that they brought into this game.
And the bad guys.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, but Mallow is he's a mage character. He uses lightning magic. He has a little bit of HP restorative stuff. But you are mostly using him for like his lightning magic.
Do you get to hop into him and ride him around places?
No. That would have been amazing.
No, that would have been great.
I mean, it looks like he's a cloud. Is that supposed to
be
his model after?
Yeah, well, see, this game really embraces the weirdness. So you find him in like the first or second town you go to, and he's under the impression he's a tadpole. Because he was raised by this wise old frog named Frog Fuchsius.
Sure, Frog Fuchsius raised this cloud person.
So wait, did the Mario world just acknowledge a real person? I think they just did.
No, he is a frog.
Confucius.
Oh, yeah, that's
true. But in frog form.
Right.
It's like when King Louis from Jungle Book, they're acknowledging that Louis Prima really exists.
I thought that was a nod to Louis Anderson.
Is that Molly?
That's a great reference. So, yeah, you do get...
Frog Fuchsius.
And he eventually breaks it to Mala that he is not a tadpole. He is not going to grow up into a frog. He is, in fact, from this cloud kingdom. And then he joins up with Mario's quest in order to, because he thinks if he journeys with Mario for long enough, he'll find his real family. Which he does, which is great. And then the other original character,
Geno. And then they're brutally murdered.
That's good. There's this other character, Geno, who is this wooden puppet come to life. He's possessed by a spirit from another world or some bullshit. But... it's hard to describe his character class. Wes, do you remember much about that character?
The only really thing I remember a lot about Geno is I remember his hand going out and he shoots these little pellets out of his hand.
Yeah.
And that's it. that's the only thing he did.
Well, everyone's got their melee attacks.
Like his fists were shoot out, right? He had a thing where his fists rocket.
It's going to depend on the items you're equipping. So you're equipping something to your weapon, your armor, and an accessory.
Okay.
And... Your weapon is going to... They're basically, everyone has two variations of their weapon. Geno has his finger shots, where he shoots bullets, or he has his rocket punch, where a fist comes out from his arm and punches the person and explodes. Mario has gloves, where he punches, and Mario has... Well, Mario also has hammers, and he has shells as well. So Mario's got three variations there. Mallow has...
who cares? He's just using lightning.
Right. You should never be using melee with Mallow anyway. But just for fun, he's got sticks. He can hit people with sticks. Or he's got cymbals. He can bang cymbals together and the sound hurts them or something. Peach also can slap or hit with a frying pan. Bowser's got a couple of different things. He's got like a chain chomp he can throw. He can toss a chain chomp.
That's kind of cool.
Or he can actually pick up Mario and throw Mario at an enemy.
That's okay.
Because of course.
He's fucking Bowser though, right?
Right.
Like he's a brute who's covered in like a shell, like an armored shell with spikes.
Yeah.
And he's going to throw an Italian plumber.
I can't quite remember what Bowser's specials are. I never really used his
character. He's just fire at one.
And I think there might be something with his shell as well.
Punch. Does he just not have, like, punch
attack? Or how about just bite their fucking head off?
Oh, yeah. That would be amazing if he does it. He just goes over and literally just tears someone in half.
No, he
throws one
He's
half.
A dinosaur.
For a little chip damage.
He is a king. If he can command minions to do it for him, he absolutely should.
But a change on him, come on.
Yeah, whatever.
Come on.
But...
who put him in charge? Like...
of?
Yeah, you know, where he is the king of.
No, he was just the biggest turtle.
And that's how he became king?
Yeah.
Duh.
I thought it was like a hierarchy. Like, he inherited the throne and his parent was Ian in some kind of weird stew. And
we do not have enough time to discuss the Mario timeline.
I think it warrants some attention.
I retract my statement because I realize there is Ludwig von Koopa.
Sure.
Who is also obviously talking about
it. Yeah, another thing. What if Mario actually does end up murdering Bowser one day? Jeez. Who inherits the throne after that?
Well, it's a throne he usurped in the first place.
Yeah, he's not.
Yeah, but it's got to go to his children.
He's not a legit king. Well, he only has one child. It's Bowser Jr.
And the other ones are what?
They're just Koopalings.
They're just bastard offspring.
He doesn't
recognize them as actual.
No, they're not even his offspring. That's been retconned. Those are not his children. They're the Koopalings or the Koopa kids. They're not his kids,
though. Bowser Jr. is not old enough to inherit. I mean, it's gonna be like the kingdom will go to shit.
Well, you know, you go back to like Yoshi's Island, and Baby Bowser is king of the Koopas. Then, even though he's a baby.
Oh my god.
There's not like some sort of steward that watches over. Like, he's basically just king of his castle.
I'm sure there's like some creepy guy
he doesn't have
in the
kingdom.
Background. Just being with this mischievous look, like, mwah, just ruling the country through.
No, the person you're describing is Kamek. He's that wizard Koopa who basically just does Bowser's bidding and, like, is his main henchman.
Sure. Sure.
I know what I'm talking about. I host a podcast called The Nintendo. I know what I'm talking about here.
I'm telling you, I'm sure he actually rules it. Like, we need to be looking at this guy.
So Bowser is your tanky character. He's got high defense, he's got high HP.
So what does Sanic do? Is he a thief?
I do like that Sanic character in Donkey Kong Country 2.
Oh,
like that little blue hedgehog. That is such an obvious reference.
Dick too.
Oh yeah, he's annoying as fuck, just like Sonic.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, we never talk about news in the Super Nintendo, but I do have to mention there's a
news. We have some 21-year-old news for everybody.
No, this is the reason. We're talking about Sonic, and I don't want to address this later, so I'll just bring it up now. In the new Sonic game that is going to be coming out this holiday season, nobody should buy this.
Don't.
Stop
encouraging them.
There is going to be a character creation tool.
Oh my god.
Yes. So.
Oh my god.
Get ready for all of DeviantArt's worst imaginations come to life.
Right. Oh my god,
yeah.
This is wonderful.
Everyone look forward to that. Now all the new Sonic characters you hate will be someone else's fault besides Sega. Anyway, but Geno's a tough character to describe because he's fast. He doesn't hit particularly hard,
well,
but
he looks like
fair damage.
Pinocchio if he were dressed like a thief.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah.
So,
I guess
what I'm seeing here.
I guess he is kind of a thief class character. He can dish out a fair amount of damage and you can do it quickly.
I see he's got some kind of rod that looks like it may cast a spell or two.
That must just be something.
Does he have a gun? Is it
either
like
that
a,
or he's got some.
Yeah, there's
kind
a thing where he shoots a beam out of his arm.
Yes.
Yeah.
That's one of his specials.
Oh, that's actually his arm. It's not like a wand.
Yeah, and the specials as well are just more than like selecting a spell from a menu. There are things you have to do, like with Mario, he can shoot fireballs, and you just have to spam the magic button over and over again to do more damage there. But Geno has, like, charge-up meters that you have to manipulate in order to do it, maximize your damage. And to be honest, I've never really been able to figure it out 100%.
Uh-huh. Sorry, I'm looking up a lot of artwork from this, and I found some really uncomfortably.
Oh, look, they're all, like, human-looking. Oh, weird.
Yeah. Human, that's anime-looking.
Yeah.
Yeah, human.
Like, oh, they're all, like, Sailor Moon characters there.
It's so cute and sweet. Yeah.
Oh, God.
2 inches later, there's going to be a fucking octopus having sex with them. Calm down.
He's a massive erection. But no, it'll be a blooper. They're going to keep it within Mario canon. It'll be a blooper.
Yes, yes, of course. Actually, they probably have a lot of things that are built around sex, like sex acts. I mean, like the chain chop itself is totally S&M. You know?
Oh, my God.
Pleasure and pain, everybody. Pleasure and pain.
Mm-hmm. You know, the mushrooms are just a little blue pill.
Yeah. Wait, what?
Yeah, he gets bigger after he takes it.
Explain that.
I thought you were going ecstasy.
The mushroom.
He's going to talk about Molly.
He gets bigger after he takes it.
Okay, I don't know. What are you talking about?
Like the little blue pill.
I don't. What do you mean?
It causes the erections.
No, you got to
be
more specific.
Or it
gets
bigger.
I'm a little
massive throbbing. All right.
Okay, we're earning the explicit tag today.
Yes, we are.
Where were
so,
we?
So, yeah, you were saying that North American people couldn't appreciate a good RPG. I wonder why, because it's us. It's us when we were 12.
What we're saying now is worse.
I know, right? This
except
is where we are now.
I wonder why nobody...
Mostly just fart jokes at that point.
Why couldn't we appreciate Final Fantasy V?
I did like Final Fantasy.
I'm sure you did.
But, you know...
It
like,
used to be good.
It was still a very...
I do
niche
want to play
genre.
The new one, though. I do actually want to play the new
15?
Yeah.
It looks pretty cool.
Looks alright.
Yeah.
I do want to play it.
Me too.
Yeah.
So.
Good talk.
The funny thing, though, was that, you know, this game sold over 1 million copies in Japan. I actually was not able to track down any reliable or confirmable sales numbers for North America. I don't think that it did as well in North America or Europe. Actually, this game didn't come out in Europe until, like,
I think it did better when it got released into the Nintendo eShop.
Maybe, yeah. Yeah, people have more of an appreciation, more of a nostalgia.
There's a character named Booster. There's literally a character named Booster.
That is the Wario, not Wario character, yes.
Booster is... You guys saw Jingle All the Way, right?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. But Booster was the character that nobody wanted.
Yeah.
Oh, my God, yeah, that weird...
So, yeah, get out of here, Booster, nobody likes you.
Yeah, they're beating up the mascot.
Oh, no.
Ah, oh, that movie is such a gem.
It really is.
It's really a bomb in there?
It's funny, though, because this game came out just before things started to sour between Nintendo and Square. Square decided to make the jump to PlayStation with the next Final Fantasy game, and then just after, I think in 1997, they decided that they were going to do games exclusively on PlayStation. They weren't going to be doing any games on the new Nintendo home console, the Nintendo 64. And, you know,
So they essentially broke up with their crazy ex-girlfriend.
Right. And things are a bit misremembered, because the president at Nintendo of the time, Mr. Grumpy Pants Yamauchi, that's his real name.
Grumpy Pants?
Yeah, Grumpy Pants Yamauchi.
His parents really must have hated him.
He said some nasty things about Square and people who like RPGs in general, like basically called them nerds who never wanted to leave their bedrooms. Not inaccurate, but still not a nice thing to say. And people started misremembering things where they considered that his reaction to Square saying, we're not going to make the next Final Fantasy for Nintendo consoles or going to PlayStation. He actually reacted fairly level-headedly to that, pretty much. So, like, well, it is what it is. What can you do? It wasn't until Square started trying to convince other key developers, mostly Enix, to also make the jump from Nintendo to PlayStation. So they were like, we're jumping ship. Everybody come with us. Which is kind of a fucked up thing to do.
Yeah, why would they care?
I don't know.
I mean,
technically it's their direct competition.
They did eventually merge with Enix. Maybe there's some sort of backdoor politics going on there, too.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, I'm sure that's part of it. But for them to tell all the other developers out there to be like, hey, abandon ship.
Yeah.
We're doing it. It's like all you're doing is making it tougher for you.
It's like you lose a friend in school, and then they go to all your other friends and be like, you shouldn't be friends with him. Mm-hmm. We should be friends with that guy. And then, you know, you're swinging by yourself in the playground, crying yourself.
This sounds like a deeply personal story.
I don't want to talk about it.
Oh, my God. I'm sorry, I made you eat poo.
That's what that was?
They told me it was hamster food.
There's peanuts in it.
Crazy. So, again, why didn't the cerebral RPGs work
out? But the situation was much more complex. And actually, it's a little bit... The word I'm looking for isn't irony, but let's just use irony anyway. It's a little bit ironic.
Oh, something's the literally intended.
Right. So, right.
Yes.
But the misfortune of it all was that Square's next game was the game that brought RPGs in the mainstream, and it was Final Fantasy VII. So Nintendo tries for damn near a decade to be like, hey, everyone, pay attention. These games are really cool, and all our friends are making them for our systems, and then their friends leave their system, and then, hey, RPGs are cool now.
Yeah.
Because of a dude on a motorcycle.
So, play the long game here, I think that Nintendo can, you know, hang their cap on the fact that they released what's probably going to be called the best game of 2017.
Yeah.
Already.
You know?
And yeah. I didn't know we're at 15. So...
Well, you know there are a bunch of other really great games released already this year, but, you know, there are games like Horizon Zero Dawn, people really love that game, or Persona 5, where these are games that are continuations of ideas and refinements of ideas like the Persona series and open-world adventure games, whereas then you have a game like Breath of the Wild, which totally redefines and is now the standard bearer for what adventure, open-world adventure games are going to be now. Mm-hmm. So, you have these really great games, and then you have this generational defining experience in Breath of the Wild, so...
But Witcher! Yeah. But Witcher, you guys.
I'm sure The Witcher is great.
Oh, man. I got bored of it so quickly.
And that's okay. Doesn't have to be for everybody. But Super Mario RPG, you know, the lasting legacy of this game is, it's a really great RPG that had some really interesting ideas with the battle mechanics.
Yeah.
And mostly the timing-based stuff. It is a brief game. It doesn't take more than 15 hours to get from start to finish.
That's saying something for an RPG. Mm-hmm. That's pretty long, though. I mean, if you think about where most games nowadays, even RPGs, like Final Fantasy X doesn't take that long.
I would contest
that. You can burn through 10 in less than 15. Having recently played it, it took me about 2 hours to get to even, like, making a genuine decision on my skill trees.
No. It takes your fucking ever, and you can't. If you could skip the cut sequences, it'd be faster. Maybe.
If you're counting the time where you actually have a controller in your hand and you make a decision, maybe it's 10 hours. If you add on all the bullshit on top of it, I bet you it's, what, do you have a timer on it?
HowLongToBeat.com has the main story at 49 hours.
Yeah, there you go.
Of what game?
Final Fantasy X.
The game takes really? It takes fucking ever.
Main story plus extra, 81 hours. Completionist, this is where they start adding all the blitzball bullshit. Completionist, 166 hours.
Must be crazy.
God
right
damn. I'm trying to see if there's a speed run for it. Average speed run. Right now, there's only one speed run profile, so it's at 20 hours. So
even put a hand, like a just a nail through your dome. You're gonna try to play a speed run.
I must be crazy because I remember burning. I guess that it feels shorter when you're playing it because I remember just burning through that game.
I clocked a ton of time because I was the completionist that wanted to get all the ultimate weapons and all that. But
like, I remember getting to points of, like, I'm already here? Like, fuck.
I think that...
That was probably when you were unemployed and you were, like, a teenager and had all the time in the world to do that shit.
Crazy then.
Where you don't realize that, hey, it's 2 a.m. Like, I'm already here. Yeah, you've been playing for 9 hours.
I've been dodging lightning strikes for the past 5 days.
Oh, my God.
Oh, I never have, never will, nor am I even, like...
Actually, I probably
fantasize about doing that.
I did. And I'll tell you, like, I had an easier time with that than I did with, of all things, the blue...
Don't say the chocobo thing.
The blue guy.
Oh, the
butterfly thing?
Yeah, that's the butterfly thing was tricky as hell.
That's hell on earth.
The thing with the butterfly, and you know, I don't think that when you're doing, like, the in-game, like, maneuvering, I don't think it controls particularly well. I think
No, it's static cameras, and you have to kind of figure out where things are just by touch. It's not very clear where you need to go, where you have to turn.
I had an easier time with the blue butterfly than I did with, like, the chocobo thing. I always had to get Wes to do it for me.
Yeah,
I could never...
I didn't remember it, honestly. I must have not been in trouble.
You had to, like, catch the balloons. You had to run through the calm lands on the chocobo, and you had to get all the balloons.
Sounds familiar. I mean, I got every item. I just don't remember that.
That was for the main characters.
They weren't, like, insanely difficult.
There's three I always just ignored.
Yeah.
That was Wakas.
That you gotta play Blitzball.
Kamari's and the Lulus.
Oh, I got Wakas.
I
was crushing Blitzball.
Fuck it. The thing with Waka was, I did that. I sat down and I go, alright, I'm gonna play a shit ton of Blitzball. Mm-hmm. I'm gonna fucking do this. And then the last, you're supposed to, like, get all of his... limit breaks, his overdrives, and then it becomes up on, like, one of the old ones after that as the prize at the end of the tournament. The last one, the Oracle Reel, never fucking showed up. And so I was going over tournament, and it was never showing up. I was like, fuck it, I don't even care anymore. I don't know what the deal was.
Some bad luck with an RNG there.
But to the lightning strike thing, the best way to do it is actually a nice little trick you can do where there's a little divot in part of the side of the map. Where, because that's what I've noticed is, like, people will sometimes, like, they'll... Because it kicks you back. Every time you dodge a lightning strike, it moves you back, like, 5 feet. And it means that then you then have to start running forward to catch up. And then that's when you invariably... It tricks you into thinking there's a lightning strike, you tap too soon. Best thing to do is get into this little divot where you jump back and you just jump further into it. So you don't really move anywhere. And you just sit there and you get... Just, you know, stare at the screen. And when it really flashes, you hit the button and you're good. It really is not that bad. I did it once through, got to like 30 strikes, messed it up, and the next time, straight through perfect.
All right, well, next time we play, you can do that for us.
I mean, I can show you how to do it.
No, I'm not doing that.
I'll knock out the first 20.
I hate myself, but not that much.
Yeah, it's just time consuming. It's really all it is, and don't fuck up.
But this isn't the Final Fantasy X podcast.
No, but yeah. Riku's one kind of sucked.
Which one?
Riku's.
The God Hand?
Yeah, you had to, like, go through the desert, and you had to, like, find all the chocobos, not the chocobos, the cactars. That sounds familiar too.
And then eventually you get into like the Cactar area, and there's all those big cactuses.
Hmm.
No. That may be Final Fantasy X 2.
Okay.
Hmm.
I can't remember.
Yeah. Again, I only remember the ones that I thought were interesting or genuinely tough. Which was the butterfly one, which fucking sucked. I don't know. It's probably the easiest one. If you get it right the first time, you spend, what, a minute?
It's very misleading, because you're like, oh, I can do this. And you mess up once. You're like, oh, I can do this. And then after you mess up for, like, that second time, you're suddenly, like, doubting yourself.
You,
and you're like, I can't do this shit.
You grasp the depth of this, and you're like, this is going to be fucking amazingly difficult. Oh, my God.
And then, you know, after that, you go, oh, yeah, that's right. I don't fucking use Kimari. Who
cares?
It's
like, I don't even like this guy. Jeez. Can I just convert him to a pelt for one of my guys' backs?
The thing with Kimari is that...
Lulu just shows up wearing them. She's like, gang.
Again, this is not the Final Fantasy X podcast, but the thing with Kimari is that he is so limited within his own sphere grid, you have to get him out of there. You have to get him
teleport
out of there as soon as you possibly can, but you're usually done with his entire like small section of the sphere grid by the time you're able to.
Yeah.
Like by the time you're able to unlock and like get him into Auron's sphere grid or into fucking Waka, whoever, it doesn't matter.
Which at that point, why not just use that character?
Right, exactly. Like you're always playing catch up with Kimari.
Yeah, it's who cares?
Yeah.
But hey, this isn't Final Fantasy X, so John, shut up.
Sorry, my apologies. Anything else about Super Mario RPG? No?
No.
Okay. Well, this game is available on the Wii Virtual Console for $8. Also, the Wii U Virtual Console for $8. And that's a really great way to play it because you get the off-TV play with that one. You can just play the little gamepad, which is great. You can get a cartridge of this on Amazon.
Oh, God.
Used.
Mm-hmm. Oh, God.
Hang on, I'm gonna have a go.
Oh God, because this is gonna be like some kind of weird collector's thing, because this is just awesome game.
It's not available brand new currently. But
not
surprised. You can get it used for $50. $55.
Well, that's not that bad.
That's not as outrageous as some of the other ones we've
talked
about.
Like Dokkan Kingdom, $1,000. Like,
there was one guy asking for Dokkan Kingdom for $1,000.
Look it up. How much is it for Dokkan right now?
If there's still the one guy asking for $1,000 event.
Yeah.
No, it looks like he either sold it or resigned. $125.
Yep.
For Dokkan Kingdom on Wii. Or on PlayStation 2, weirdly enough, $160 for a PS2 version of Dokkan Kingdom. Which is a fucking great game.
Yeah, we gotta play that again, dude. We need to have like a Dokkan Kingdom night.
Well, we're gonna need a whole week.
Okay, we can have Dokkan Kingdom Week. We come over every night,
uh-huh.
Start hashing a little bit more into this, just, you know, get going. Somebody goes Darkling, and then we, you know, instantly kill the Darkling and steal their good shield.
We need to find some sucker who's never played it before.
Ryan, you want to play?
I'm pretty sure he's played it before.
I don't think I've ever played this before, but I can't imagine that you guys are going to outright call me a sucker.
I'm going to think no.
Only if you let me play, like, I don't know, maybe 10 fights a piece in Street Fighter. Just show you what it means to be good at something.
Natalie really loves this game.
Dokkan Kingdom?
Yeah. Every time they're in town, they're like, Wes, can I play Dokkan Kingdom? And unfortunately, mine's gone for good now.
Is this on Wii that you played this?
Yep.
Play
I lent it to a friend of mine. Now that friend doesn't talk to me anymore. So
this looks like a Mario Party
game.
It is similar to a Mario Party game, and this is not the Dokkan Kingdom podcast.
In my defense, though, she was really hot. So.
Okay. But the premise of the game, you're moving around this board. That's a sort of facsimile of
it's
a world
Mario
map.
Party meets RPG meets
Tell me their
Monopoly.
Genders, so I know which ones I'm allowed to be sexually attracted to.
You can be sexually attracted to whoever you want.
I know, that's your preference. This is great.
May I recommend the king?
Ooh. I already like where this is going.
She
probably has a lot of money.
You know when I text randomly, they're like, hey, we're doing this tonight, and my response is Sweetdiculous? It's from Dokkan Kingdom.
Really?
Yeah.
Nice.
Sweetdiculous.
Right, and what you do is you move around all these different nodes in the map, as you do in a Mario Party game.
And you collect bear costumes.
You collect bear costumes, yes. But you also engage in these RPG battles. There are battle nodes where you have to fight against enemies, and the objective is
Oh, shit, I have played this game before.
Yeah.
We played this game. Yeah, we played this game like a decade ago, man.
Yeah.
Okay, it's so good.
That's been a while.
Yeah.
So good. What was it, the Robo Knight? Is that the name of that one?
Yeah, Robo Knight.
Oh, he was so good.
Because we used to get together and play Mario Party, and I think you gave this one a shot, and it did have like a lot of weird RPG.
Oh, it's so good.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, he has the Robo Knight, classes. And he gets like the Robo Knight gun, and like when he does the slash, whatever that was, the critical attack, he like fucking turns into a tank and like, it's awesome. Oh my god.
Yep.
Mm-hmm.
So, do you want to talk a little bit about Batman before, or do you want to bank it for another time?
No, I mean, I think, like, I'm pretty much prepared to comment on it.
Okay, let's do it.
Yeah, so The Adventures of Batman and Robin is a game that came out, I guess around this time. Yeah, but I got it on an emulator here. I'm playing it on my laptop, so... you can just play through it. Yeah, what to say? Like, it's based off of the original 90s...
Nope.
Batman the Animated Series, which is whole near and dear to
my heart. It looks just like it. It's really cool. I didn't realize it looks like this, or else
the parallax backgrounds. It's very authentic. It looks really, really good.
It looks just like it, and I love that show.
The soundtrack is like an 8-bit version of the original series.
Is this like level 1? Because all I gotta do is like run forward and punch him in the face. That's all I gotta do.
Oh, it'll get tougher. Just keep playing. What I will say is, so this is a side-scrolling beat-em-up, essentially. You're playing as Batman, of course, from this series. And again, it looks just like it. I don't know. I'm not prepared to endorse it, though, for a couple of reasons. One is that the game doesn't do anything to explain itself. Like, it just sort of throws you into the game. You start with, like, what, 7 items? With just a little graphic. Okay. In the top left that tells you what it is.
I'm about to die horribly.
Sorry, here. Let me set that up for you.
Holy crap.
Get that out of the way. Yeah, and it gives you, like, there's a bunch of items. You have a grapple thing, you have a batarang,
jump off.
And then you've got these limited use, like 5 uses of this thing. It's like a spray or a smoke bomb.
And even like a pepper spray?
Yeah, like, when do you use all of this stuff? Under what circumstances do I use it? I just simply have it. And I'm like, well, I only got 5 of it. I don't want to just use one to see what it does.
Right.
It's like, tell me, what am I actually supposed to do this?
I wonder if they're, like, that's got to be something that they include in the instruction manual. But yeah, I mean, it's not really intuitive design to be like, hey, here's all the stuff you have at the beginning. Best of luck.
Yeah.
Oh, you can wall jump. Look at that.
So yeah, they show you that you can grapple onto walls. You can wall jump.
How integral of a mechanic is that? Are you doing a lot of wall jumping? Like...
So far, a lot.
I'm dead.
Yeah, let's just die.
Yeah.
So the game's, like, unforgiving. It doesn't teach you how to do anything. You would think that your first mission would pretty much just be kind of, like, you're walking on a straight line, fighting bad guys, learning how to use the items you have. And then it's sort of like, we are going to very briskly
just murder
your
face.
Do a bunch of shit. Hold down and do jumps. Try that. Hold that. Yeah, you see you got to roll.
Oh!
Like, congrats. You just discovered you got to roll.
I just discovered I could roll. That's pretty cool.
What do you do with that? Yeah, and it's, it actually reminds me a lot of the old, about all things, the NES Chip and Dale's game.
Oh, yeah?
It's got that same kind of blocky art style. Actually, it looks pretty good. It's pretty clean. The colors are vibrant. You're not confused about who you are or what you're doing. It's just, now do this. I'll press up, latch on, now press the same button you used to do that. Just press up. Hold up, hit it again. There you go.
Oh, okay.
See, like, that's the kind of shit the game should try to explain to you.
Like, how do you use this? Oh, shit, that spikes.
Yeah, and you can, I mean, so, yeah, and they give you interesting mechanics.
Spikes, just like in the show. That's just run into spikes.
You have an unlimited grapple gun. Like, so you can swing yourself around if you somehow figure out how to actually do it. Yeah.
But there's no point in which, like, you have an encounter point in which it's necessary to... grapple around?
Yeah. I mean, just getting through certain stuff, you have to do it.
But it's just
at the same time, you would like to have it be a...
Oh, shit!
You can jump on his thing.
You can jump on his jump?
Yeah, his little spear. Oh, and that's the other thing. These are also based off of classic episodes, so you would recognize these if you've watched a lot of Batman the Animated Series. This is a classic showdown that Batman had with the Joker in a toy factory.
Mm.
Like, it's actually very faithful to the original series. I just think that mechanically, it's fine. It looks good. It sounds good. It doesn't do anything... The gameplay itself is not really fun, and it doesn't explain itself well enough. Like, again, what do I do with all these items?
It sounds like they're trying to introduce a lot of stuff quickly rather than trying to do it more intuitively to where, like, hey, this is the thing, master this skill.
Yeah, and there aren't many levels from what I understand. There's very few levels, and they're very quick to get through.
I kicked his head off.
Nicely done.
Eat a dick.
Yeah.
Got you now, Joker!
Granted, the sound is limited. The soundtrack is good because you hear a lot of the original, or rather the chiptune notes from the original scores.
Mm.
Again, it's not, of course, the flushed out 108-piece orchestra that Danny Elfman had access to make a kids show, a fucking kids show. He has a full orchestra.
They had a train waiting for him in the back of the toy factory the whole time.
Yeah.
Oh, I was never going to catch him.
There's Harley Quinn. She's looking pretty good.
Oh, yeah, there you go.
Yeah, it's faithful, but I think unless you are just like the biggest fucking diehard, and I am a huge fan of this series.
Oh yeah, I love this.
And series. I don't even think I want to recommend it. I think it's pretty boilerplate, just beat 'em up.
I'm just standing on the
road. Yeah, you can do that. Just actually go to the front here and sit and watch. You'll just don't have to do anything.
This kind of is a
good. You're beating the level.
Oh, I just got hit, Ryan. You lying?
Jump up. Maybe you're trying to jump down there and try to fight.
Oh, yeah. God.
I mean, it is kind of disappointing that it's
what
not
the hell?
Better than it is. Because this is developed and published by Konami.
Yeah, I noticed the Konami. And to its credit, it looks good. I mean, it looks like all
it does
Konami
look good.
Yeah, they did a pretty nice job here.
How do you jump on that crush
just,
I died.
Just
Batman can't die. He's fucking Batman.
Yeah, he can't kill anyone and he can't die, apparently.
I mean, come on.
So that's my take on this game. Not record. How much does it cost?
For a cartridge?
Sure.
$90.
What?
Holy hell.
That's what I was like, hey, you wanna download this? Because we're not going to give some rando on Amazon $90 for a cartridge of a game we never played.
I'm really floored by that. That's kind of a surprise. Maybe it's just that this is so... Like, I guess this is a sort of thing.
You can't jump down there. Why am I supposed to be there, then?
I think you just waited out.
You told me I could jump down.
I didn't tell that.
You led me to my death,
I just
Ryan.
Told you the Joker was there, and you opted to jump.
Oh, my God.
Yeah, I guess you didn't get a chance to play any of this game?
No.
Yeah.
No. Oh, sorry. My bet, $50, which is still pretty steep.
Yeah, still way more.
Totally worth it. I'm going to go buy one right now. I'll take 8.
You're probably going to be a crappy consumer.
I would imagine, I don't know, like, if you were going to spend $10, $5 for this game, go for it, but...
Mm-hmm.
I mean, if you're spending $5 for this game, I hope the thing that you're doing is selling it. And taking that $45 and converting it into some other things.
Putting it towards Super Mario RPG?
Putting it towards copies of like Madden 2000 so you can get the back plates and put them on
Japanese baseball games?
Yes,
oh
exactly.
My God.
I need to play a little more of that to figure out what the hell is going on.
That game
do.
Sucked.
All right, well, I think we've been going on for long enough here. Any other Super Nintendo games you guys want to give a shout-out to? Or are we done here? Are we good?
I think this might be the tail end of it, yes.
I think we're pretty good.
Mm-hmm. Cool. So there was nothing scheduled that I wanted to talk about for the Super Nintendo show for June.
That's kind of basic stuff, though.
So,
should we just, like, make up a new show this time around next month? Just do another one-shot show? You know, we can make an X-Men show or something.
Maybe. We'll rummage around and see if we can find any Super Nintendo games we might have missed. But, you know, yeah, worst case scenario, let's talk about X-Men or something.
Yeah, I'll make sure I read them by then.
Sure you will. But I think it's going to close out the show for the week. Next week is the official show.
Ooh.
Oh, my God.
What?
June 22nd was a very eventful day in gaming in 1996. Quake came out.
Oh, yeah?
Not Nintendo related yet.
Right.
But, holy shit, yeah, Quake is one of probably the 5 most important games ever made. One of the 5 most important. I'm not even going to let you, like,
what is
look it? Up and think, is what? That the truth? It is the truth.
Okay.
Oh,
what
John McCormack did is to totally rebuild gaming engines for the future. Like, without his mind, gaming would not be where it is today. from a technical standpoint, he made like what Greek civilization was and like, you know, 200 BC compared to everybody else's, where John McCormack's mind was to all the
other games. Okay, so he was the game developer,
yeah.
He is to video games what the Beatles are to rock and roll.
Yeah, exactly.
There we go.
To popular music, not even rock and roll, popular music.
There we go.
Name one other game he's made.
Doom?
Name two other games he's made.
Quake 2. What he did is he also made engines. The big thing is that he makes these engines that other games are built upon. Like right now, you think of like how significant the Unreal Engine has been for gaming.
Mm-hmm.
Like games that we all love, we don't realize that there's the backbone, the architecture is all built upon somebody else's engine. It's just we play these games, we don't think about that.
Yeah.
I mean, Quake is a revolutionary game.
Let's decide right now, what are the other four most important games ever made? We're just going to decide.
That's a tough one.
The Home Alone game.
I would say that
what that game did was create a standpoint in what to rate other bad games against.
Mm.
See, that gave us a real glimpse at how bad gaming can get.
It gave us all a common touch point.
Yes. Mario Brothers.
Super Mario Brothers, yeah.
That seems like a pretty safe answer.
Legend of Zelda.
Which one?
Breath of the Wild.
Breath of the Wild.
Well, I think time's going to tell how important
it hasn't
that
come out yet.
Is.
I'm going to say ARMS.
No, probably A Link to the Past. Because
yeah, I can see that.
Because it set the template for what Zelda games were until fucking 2017.
And a lot of games get their influence from Zelda aspects. So
maybe even Super Metroid. Super Metroid's pretty, like, especially
that's
right now.
Greatest, not most of.
I just did a Google search. You're saying no way in fucking hell is Skyrim even in the consideration here. But
you guys can eat a dick.
Mario Brothers. I see Grand Theft Auto. I feel like maybe Grand Theft Auto 3.
Maybe. Yeah. I think you can make the case for that.
Yeah. Not BioShock. No. But no.
I mean, like, if you're gonna make a case,
Ocarina of Time makes a list.
World of Warcraft.
That's very
World of Warcraft. I think you can make a case for. Let's go back to BioShock for a second. I don't think you can make a case for BioShock because you have a game like Metroid Prime preceding it, and Super Metroid preceding that. Like, how does BioShock get to be most important game of all time when it's building on things that came before it?
Half-Life, I see listed.
Maybe.
Yeah,
well, I think, like,
if you're already saying Quake,
maybe a bigger case for Quake.
You don't need to say, like, every single
just because it has precedence.
I would say Chrono Trigger. Because, I mean, yeah, there were other big RPGs that came out before, but that one really got people really hooked into it. Because that was such an icon RPG. This is what RPG should be.
But if you're going for like what brought in mainstream appeal, you make a better case for Final Fantasy VII.
You can't.
I think what came first? Final Fantasy VII.
It did. Okay.
Chrono Trigger. We've already talked about it on the show. So I think that was 1995. Like, I think you can make a legit case for Chrono Trigger being one of the best designed games, especially one of the best designed RPGs. But most important, like, what's the legacy of Chrono Trigger? What games are trying to mimic Chrono Trigger?
Oh.
Chrono Cross, which... Like, Chrono Trigger is such a... Chrono Trigger, like, this is a Super Nintendo show, so we can rant about Chrono Trigger for a second. Chrono Trigger is such a moment in time where all of his talent comes together and
he has a belt with sensu beans.
Right.
It's just like Dragon Ball.
Extremely good. And it's something like... that they no one's been able to live up to since, so no one has really tried to like put together this all-star team of game developers and make something like Chrono Trigger.
Yeah, but like, I mean, you can argue that a lot of games will get their influence from Chrono Trigger nowadays, the way that RPGs generally are.
Well, like what?
Final Fantasy VII. Yeah, it's more like the guy.
Well, I'm gonna go to your point you made before, like World of Warcraft. World of Warcraft might be a more influential game, and I think that how a game influences
but World of Warcraft
other games
and created like the MMO RPG that created that huge
and
thing.
Also like that and those sort of design philosophies, especially battle systems, started to permeate offline RPGs. So it informs more than its own genre. It goes beyond that and into another
genre. Even still, it's one of the best MMORPGs. It's one of the
there's a reason.
I can't think of anything before that. Like, I can't think of anything that came. Was that the first MMORPG?
I don't know.
What year? Well, I was playing Diablo 2 with friends, but that's not an MMO. That's just like me and at most 8 or
yeah, that's just a regular multiplayer. But this is like mass multiplayer. There's, you receive
that's
hundreds
the
of people.
M in
that's
MMO.
The M in it. This is escalating.
One that I've seen made a list, and I think it's actually genius pick. Was Oregon Trail. Oregon Trail is a game that is a lot of people's probably very first exposure to even playing a video game. It's one that everybody has played probably at some point in their life.
I didn't get a copy of Oregon Trail.
You didn't? Did you?
I'd like to actually.
Did you
beat
go
it.
To school?
I did. I played it.
Yeah,
but I always, you know, dysentery is a bitch.
Yeah. So I see that make the list. That's pretty.
I don't think Oregon Trail was particularly good at, like, especially teaching children on what it is that you're supposed to be doing, because you always did the same thing. Like, okay, let's stock up on some shit and just run to Oregon as fast as we can.
I played the long game, actually, though.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah.
Well, then you were the one kid who was good at picking up what Oregon Trail was trying to put down.
I played so many times that I had all these different run-throughs that I took great pride in. No, I'm just kidding.
It was me and my buddies at school always played War in the World as Carmen Sandiego.
Oh, man, that was a good one.
Well, the guy that did Oregon Trail actually did a post-mortem at, like, the game developer conference. And it's a fascinating video to watch. Like, hearing him break down what exactly Oregon Trail is and, like... Because all of the ones get a little too deep into... Like how, like, literally nuts and bolts how they coded the game. He doesn't do a lot of the coding stuff. He really just talks in general about where the idea behind doing this came from and the long-lasting legacy the game has had. Because, yeah, I mean, it is really iconic. So, I don't know. I don't think we got anywhere closer to naming our top five. I think we pretty much established that.
I mean,
Mario World.
I'll let you have a quake. Like, Mario Brothers, I'm still going
to
stick with Link to the Past and Super Metroid.
Doomquake.
I think both of them.
I think Doomquake.
Doomquake? Well, which came first? Let's just pick one that's first.
Probably say Super Metroid, but I mean, if you, like, walk into, like, anything with a bunch of gamers and go, who has actually played Super Metroid here? I mean...
But if you walk into a group of gamers, they've all downloaded something from Steam or several things from Steam that is a Metroid game, given a different skin. Everyone's played a version of Super Metroid because it's hugely popular in the indie scene.
All right.
It's so hard to do. It's probably easier just to pick a console or a medium from which a game can be played and be like, top five arcade cabinet games from the 80s or something.
And five is such
it's
an arbitrary number.
It's hard to say. World of Warcraft is clearly here, and
right.
Quake is here, and then Mario's here, and there goes Tetris or whatever.
There goes Tetris.
It's like, you know, it's not really fair to the other games to try to put them all in the same playing field. The best thing you could probably do is go with either average critic reviews or sales.
I think it'd be easier to pick a game that is the most influential for each genre
maybe.
Of game. I think it'd just be easier to do that.
Yeah, and then if it's first-person shooters, it's probably... I want to put them together to be the same baby, Doom and Quake, but they're just the perfect first-person shooter. The best it's ever been.
I think that's the end.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Till next time, everybody.
So long.
Later.